This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2020, held in Belleville, Pennsylvania on March 6 and 7.
All right, I see that there are quite a few people here and quite a few of you enjoying visiting, and I invite you to gather for this session on effective boards and resolving issues together. I think some of you have wished that I would have had a little slower pace. Some of you have, one of you mentioned that you wished for a handout. I'm sorry I hadn't developed that. So I will just point out that my email address is up here if you want to jot that down. And email me any requests for the gaps in what you picked up. I'd be happy to cooperate with that, with you in that. And I've enjoyed the feedback, the interaction, and the positive testimonies of how God is working in your schools, and even the challenges that some of you are mentioning have been a blessing to me to realize that we are in it together. So thinking again here about resolving challenges together, I especially am going to work on the together part. And so I'm wanting to present to you four habits of effective teams today. And this isn't an exhaustive list exactly, but I think they're very important. And so we'll get started with that. Habit number one, an important principle of group dynamics is to meet regularly. You may have a monthly meeting, you may have another schedule, it doesn't matter so much the frequencies of these meetings. Maybe you need to have a special meeting sometimes, but it is good to have regular meetings. And I'm going to quote from Larry Osborne in his book, Sticky Teams. What he's talking about is teams that stick together, that work together. He says, whenever a group of people increase the amount of time they spend together, now I've hit a, I've moved here, sorry. There is a corresponding increase in their regard and appreciation for one another. I know from experience of over 40 years on a pastoral team that since we have regular meetings, that we stay more abreast of each other. We know each other's responses and attitudes, hearts. And so it's a lot easier for us when we're out and about and a congregant comes to express some thoughts or concerns that we can go to bat for each other. And I think the same thing happens for school boards. Whenever we're regular and sometimes people can't be there, that weakens it a little bit. But if we do put forth a regular and consistent effort in being there, we are blessed. There are some related concepts to this idea of having regular and frequent meetings. Outside the boardroom, no team member shall undertake to speak for the team, except to clarify past decisions. And I think I mentioned that yesterday. It's so basic that it comes up again. We don't go out and about and speak for the team. We aren't the board. None of us is the board. Not even the chairman is the board. And so we recognize that out and about, we can speak for ourselves. It's always a free country there. But let's remember to give a special place to the board. And since these regular meetings facilitate communication and trust, it's a positive situation. In fact, that kind of leads in to the next slide, although let me also mention some other benefits of regular meetings. I believe it improves the spiritual health of the school. It builds the character of leaders and trains younger team members. So the meetings that sometimes we get a little weary of, going to another meeting, build us our conviction that meetings have a function and a significant role in the success of the school. Let me also say that I think that it's kind of good for us to consider that board work is largely behind the scenes work. And so it's, I think, like the human heart, invisible but always there, always life-giving, always almost unobserved. And so board work is a little like that. Maybe sometimes you think it's thankless work, but you know, if we're there and regular with our meetings and giving the support to our staff and administrators, school life goes on, and oftentimes quite smoothly. Why? Because there's the constant and regular attention to the well-being of the organization. First habit, meet regularly. Second habit, trust each other. You know, trust is crucial to successful teamwork. It enables members to contribute without fear, admit mistakes, request help, give the benefit of the doubt, accept apologies, concentrate on vital issues, and anticipate meetings without dread. Trust. Trust is something we extend. Trust is something that we gratefully receive. The success of a board's problem-solving, issue-oriented teamwork hinges on trust. And the trust needed is more than knowing that our colleague is going to do what he says he will do. It believes that another person's motives are sincere. Trust. You know, this comfort with vulnerability. So let me just admit that to speak up in a group setting puts ourselves out, our position out, our ideas out, and it gives us vulnerability by doing so. But this comfort that we can have, that it's free, that I'm free to do this, and the daring to do it is a real help, a benefit. And it's fostered when members discover that others won't attack them personally when they participate. And it's further fostered when members discover that what's shared here isn't freely shared out and about. So that this is a safe place for me to contribute, and confidence is built over time. Our board chairman, current board chairman, moved into our community a number of years ago, and a few years after he became a member and was getting acclimated, he was elected to the school board. And just a couple of years, it seems like in my memory, after that, he was elected to be board chair. I remember when sort of a sensitive issue came up one time that he was pretty careful about how he introduced a certain need or a certain challenge or criticism, the decision that had to be made. And a month later, maybe two or three, I've forgotten, probably three, he referred to this and he said, "I've discovered that in this circle, it's safe to say a name." So he identified who he was talking about this time, and I think that's a better policy anyway, as a general rule, that we aren't hiding people In fact, maybe I'm not getting ahead of myself here, but I think we shouldn't be representatives, at least in a narrow sense. We should be representatives of the whole of the constituents, the whole of the parent group, not that I'm a representative of the Solstices or the Martins or the youth or any subgroup. So he was saying that I've discovered that it's safe here. You men are men of integrity that aren't just out gossiping and around. It's a real blessing to hear him say that. Patrick Lencioni said, he wrote a book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. It's a, I don't know if you're familiar, it's a pretty widely known book, a fable. And in it, he says, in the context of building a team, trust is the confidence among team members that their peers' intentions are good and that there is no reason to be protective or careful around the group. In essence, teammates must get comfortable being vulnerable with one another. It's page 195 in that book. I had a fellow church member one day. I took him out to eat, and they were about to move from the community, but he said to me that day, as we visited, he said, you know, a book that I read has changed me, and it's this book. He said, I'll loan it to you, and he gave it to me. And I read it, found it very easy reading. I was so glad to hear that he who had learned to be very guarded was learning to trust. And so he said, I'm choosing to trust you with this that I'm going to say today. And while I don't remember nearly all of the details of that, I remember the concept that he's speaking about and how powerful it was in his life. You know, what's said here should remain here. That's part of the building of trust that it takes. When others fail in these areas, mature members still can learn to extend trust in the willingness to be vulnerable so that others who haven't quite learned the techniques of good teamwork can learn off of us to also reciprocate. Sometimes we hear the statement, trust must be earned. And I'm not here to say that that's not right. We often discover that we need to earn somebody's trust, or that our consistency and our integrity will bring trust. But there is also something that I think the mind of Christ helps us to learn as we go through life, and that is that who's going to make that first move? Doesn't the way of Christ lead us to extend trust even to those who aren't trustworthy? Isn't it the mind of Christ to give love to those who are unlovely, and so on? There's a book that I didn't bring with me entitled Trustology that can expound on that subject a lot more than what I'm going to take time for today. But I just encourage us as board members or committee members or pastors in any kind of an organizational leadership as a team, we need to learn the lessons of trust and learn to extend trust. And admittedly, this kind of extension of trust involves a vulnerability that we have. But for the board to thrive, trust must be freely given. While it comes at personal sacrifice, extending it opens a welcoming door to others to develop vulnerability-based trust that dares to contribute constructively, and board teamwork results. This extension of unearned trust is not intended to give space for the continued aggression of others. Rather, the trust being offered openly acknowledges the hurt and pain being felt and calls for reciprocal response of apology, goodwill, and trust. Believing in each other is crucial to successful board deliberations. It enables members to contribute without fear, admit mistakes, request help, give the benefit of the doubt, accept apologies, concentrate on vital issues, and anticipate meetings without dread. Again, as I've said before, what is said here should remain here. This really builds the trust of the team. Now, if we're to extend trust, if we're going to be regular with building relationships and all, this sets the stage for us to debate ideas freely. This is habit number 3, debate ideas freely. So let's not hesitate to have lively discussions, engaging in problem solving and seeking for the solutions. In fact, these things are going to happen, this is going to facilitate the discovery of the solutions that can quickly be found without rancor. When the board and the principal gather and can engage in healthy and unfiltered conflict around ideas, they are richly blessed. By unfiltered conflict, I mean that each does not fear to express his ideas freely, even if they're different from what others have expressed. If the conflict of ideas, which is commonly called discussion, is healthy, tension is absent and the minds are free to consider ideas. This is a key component of teamwork. And as the illustration shows us here, the people, the committee is around the table, the board is around the table, and they're open-faced and they're engaged. That debate of ideas, that exchange of different perspectives helps the board find the path forward. Let me think about this a little bit more with you. Pursuing healthy debate, it means that we can maybe suggest another idea. These are positive things here. Asking questions of the person with the idea, pointing out possible repercussions, and having a voice. Yes, we participate. We don't squelch these things. These are positives. And then not being critical of the idea, or especially not attacking the person or being critical of the person, or being the devil's advocate and being difficult, or just demanding to be heard and insisting that the board all agrees with our ideas. So healthy debate is willing to examine ideas and hear different viewpoints, and let the Holy Spirit, allow the Holy Spirit to bring the group to a consensus on the idea, on the path forward. Focusing on issues as a team, again, if we're positive, we speak up about problems and we're open to express our feelings, we address issues head on, and we encourage a calm demeanor. But other ways to work with our feelings and ideas is that we overpower and we get aggressive with our opinions. We say things that we may regret, and or we seek to overpower with logic and facts, and we look to even the score. Now we illustrate So we have the constructive versus the destructive debate. We've been degenerated into mean-spirited and personal attacks, or we can withdraw from the confrontation, and we create an artificial harmony by just kind of shrinking back. But in between these two and opposite responses is the healthy conflict of ideas, that we're engaged, everybody's engaged, until the board has come to a consensus. As we go further, notice that the circle is there. The board has different puzzle pieces. And yes, I think I see, oh, there must be one that's going to have the right one that matches the idea. But they're together, though. They've worked together thus far. And then let's note this. Oh, artificial harmony. Here the guy is just zipping up. He's even hiding his head in the sand. And here's the other guy, the aggressive one. He's like the elephant stomping on the other fellow with mean-spirited personal attacks. You know, when discussion becomes destructive, meetings will become undisciplined, confusing, and lengthy. As the members become discouraged and they'll sink into a quiet, artificial harmony, then loyalty and teamwork will wane. By contrast, if the conflict of ideas is healthy, tension is absent, and minds are free to engage in lively meetings of problem solving to set the direction of the organization. So it's up to the board, collectively and individually, to overcome the crippling fear of conflict that's caused by destructive debate. The answers involve constructive communication, extension of trust, even when others sometimes haven't earned it, avoidance of personal attacks, and honest admission of mistakes. You know, we're not perfect and we won't go forward perfectly. So the humility that we need to admit our mistakes can restore that trust. And sometimes, you know, if we're sensitive to the spirit and we make a mismove, the restoration can be quick if we're humble. But if a pattern develops, it'll take perhaps a little longer, but don't give up. Healthy conflict of ideas is part of healthy board work. So the habit number three is to debate ideas freely. As I've said, freely engaging in discussion in an environment of trust results in lively, engaging meetings where problems are addressed and solutions quickly identified without rancor. So may God bless our board activities that we can be successful in this. I already told you some practical pointers. Maybe there'll be a little repetition here, but I believe that we should adopt policies that no they is allowed, so that when we come to the board, we're not shielding the one or five people that are out there. We're not using that indefinite they that might be, you know, just a few. We're we're being open with our board and using the names in kindness. We're also recognizing that we're not representative of a certain group. We're trying to represent the whole board. And everybody around the board is, if we've got that kind of orientation, we've got a better board. And then, what does God want us to do? This should always be our focus. What's God's direction? And as I indicated yesterday, I think this ties in well here, that to begin the board meetings with group prayer, so that we are all joined in bringing to the table the issues of the school, the concerns on our hearts, and if there are needs for prayer requests for teachers, or if there are prayer requests for certain students and parents, that is on the table and brought to the Lord. Habits of effective teams. So I've told you that first I recommend that we meet regularly, that we trust each other, we debate ideas freely, because a board that overcomes these two crippling dysfunctions of absence of trust and the fear of conflict is well on the way to effective, healthy debate and teamwork. And that's a great board. But there's a fourth one. Now we've debated and we've decided, we need to learn to commit to the decisions. What's wrong with the picture that I've got up here? You see there are seven men that are holding up the teamwork, but the one has put his K down and he's walking away. He's in dissent. He's not in agreement or support of what the board has decided, and he's letting the world know about it. You know, great teams, Patrick Lencioni says, ensure that everyone's ideas are genuinely considered, which then creates a willingness to rally around whatever decision is ultimately made by the group. So that once a decision is made, each member embraces it as his own, presenting and defending it. There may be some times that I've found that this one needs a little something else. I remember the many times, that as a pastor and father, I would talk to my children with full defense of the group decision. And they grew up thinking that Dad was lockstep in every way with every decision. I feel like I failed them sometimes by not admitting to them that I have a human side too. And that, you know, I see what you're saying. I would tend to agree with you in your concern, but I'm a team player, and I will defend. Once it's decided, that's the way that we'll live. If I would have done that a couple or more times here and there, I believe that would have been a little stronger serve to my sons. And they've told me that when they were grown, basically, that they really liked to hear me say something like that. That helped them. So I will offer that, but I'm coming back again to say that when it comes to board work, when it comes to pastoral work, I really believe this one is crucial. Great teams ensure that everyone's ideas are genuinely considered in the debate. But that then should create a willingness to rally around whatever decision is ultimately made by the group. You know, constructive debate is a vital step in effective decision making, but team members must commit to the idea for it to succeed. This part is equally important as the first. Without full support, apathy and confusion and infighting will torpedo the implementation of the decision, and tragically, the morale of the organization will suffer. Yesterday, after one of the sessions, one of you came up and told me that in your board, you have a man that sits there, and when an idea is brought up or an issue is on the table, he can sit there with studied contemplation, maybe a furrow of the brow, and not contribute a whole lot. And maybe after the board has made its decision that night, a day or two later, the man will call the chairman up and say that, you know, I've just plainly got questions about this. Well, not to squelch everybody's honest expressions, but I told the man, it sounds like that freight has already left the dock. That is to say, it's a little too late to be part of the discussion when the decision is now made. This is not to say that decisions are infallible and that the group can't come back to reconsider in a subsequent time, but certainly that man and that chairman can't turn the board's decision on its head. They are not the board, and so it would have to return to regular board session for that to be reconsidered. Well, these are some of the challenges of life. I'm the kind that when ideas are being brought, will tend to have a fairly quick response. Well, I wonder about this. And you know, my first responses aren't nearly always the ones that win out. I mean, there's somebody else comes along and things get refined and we may end up at quite a different place. And sometimes I look at how some of these slower talkers and evaluators, how they come up with the chance to speak about last, and they look like the knight in shining armor. And so I tip my hat to that kind of a gifting. But on the other hand, they kind of need some of the initiators too, like myself, to get things rolling, get it out, and they're thinking, they're evaluating. And hopefully these people aren't too slow, like the one I just mentioned that takes 2 days for him to call back and say, I'm uneasy about this kind of thing. So committing to decisions is now where we are, and I pick this up again, that once a team has made a decision, each member embraces it as his own and presents and defends it. The time for individual expression and dissent is in the boardroom, not outside it. Afterwards, all members must loyally and unitedly represent the team's decision. So again, now's a really good time for us to remember that I'm not representing a certain group of people. So that now that we're outside of the board, I don't quickly go running over to this little group, this in-group that I would represent, and tell them, well, we sat together, and in spite of my best efforts, the board has decided to do this and, you know, give that kind of presentation, you know. Board members don't represent individual small groups, subsets. Board members represent the whole. And when the board has made a decision and we've been a part of the debate, now we go out and represent that to others. Jim Collins wrote a book, Good to Great, and it's a book about business, not about boards. But he says this on page 62 that ties right into board work. He says, great management teams consist of people who debate vigorously in search of the best answers, yet who unify behind decisions regardless of parochial interests. I like that. God help us to apply that. You know, board decisions do not need to be unanimous. A dissenting vote can be healthy if respectfully given. If dissenting votes are documented in the minutes, it indicates that several sides were evaluated by the board instead of just uncritically rubber-stamped. In the event of lawsuit against a nonprofit, that can be helpful evidence of the organization's carefulness in deliberation. Also, some dissenters have felt strongly enough about an issue that they've requested that the minutes record their reasons for dissent. Still, after the vote is taken, for the good of the whole, everyone loyally and unitedly represents the board's decision to the community. So, debate and commit. It's kind of a good motto here. You know, there would be lines beyond which we'd realize this isn't the final word. I mean, there are ethical issues, there may be legal boundaries, and so on and so forth, that would say, okay, board, you made a mistake, we got to get this thing right, let's get back onto the safe territory. But within those parameters, debate and commit are really, really good habits for us to have. So here's a summary of these four habits. Meet regularly, trust each other, debate ideas freely, commit to decisions, and again, Patrick Lencioni's quotation, great teams ensure that everyone's ideas are genuinely considered, which then creates a willingness to rally around whatever decision is ultimately made by the group. The committee suggested that we talk about some things that we can address together as boards. There are sometimes some issues that we might need to face, like a difficult parent. So now I'm going to ask you, what are some things that you would bring to the table here as how should a board deal with a difficult parent? This is a sudden switch, isn't it? I'm going from lecture to seeking dialogue. What would you think of here? What are some good ideas for boards to use? Yes. Well, now that would be, that'd take a little nerve for him, wouldn't it? I mean, of course, he's friends with everybody, right? The board is collegial and approachable, so it's not too bad, right? But it's kind of hallowed ground to come by himself, right? But it would be good. If he's got a serious concern, that would be good. I'm just saying some of these things because I'm trying to put myself in his position. There was a hand over here.
I think communication is key in some of the circumstances that we work with. It's been because we've had parents that have a different perspective on what happened at school than the teacher or whoever else was there. And so sometimes proactively communicating about an episode from the teacher
okay, so if there's been an event at school that the teacher knows about, the teacher can reach out and give a perspective that would be helpful to the parent. Now, I'm going to spin a different story. Not in disagreement, but just to say that's what wasn't going to fit quite everything. Some years ago in our school, we had a teacher that was especially gifted in teaching character traits and qualities, the godly character qualities. And so one parent took objection to that. It wasn't, you know, a behavioral issue. He took objection to the fact that the parent was spending time doing this instead of teaching the three R's and so on. And he said, look, we're Christian parents. We teach the child morality and the things of the Bible, and they go to Sunday school and so on. That's the place for that, but not in the Christian school. And so that contact was a little difficult for the teacher, and so she went to the principal, and so the principal and the teacher called the parents in for a discussion about these things, and that was more of the same. His position was this: let's cut this down. And I think the school did maybe adjust a little bit, or partially. But the interesting thing was that this parent was touching on something that was almost universally appreciated by the other parents of the school. And so he was quite a bit in the minority here. Well, but it was a deeply held concern and position that he had. And I don't remember now exactly what all steps there were. This has been a number of years ago, several decades. But then others of the board were together with a meeting with him, maybe the whole board, I'm not sure anymore. And he didn't swing the whole ship, redirect everything. And by next year, he took his child out of the school and placed him in the public school. This is one of those I don't feel good stories. But it wasn't the kind of thing where people got into, you know, rays of temper or voice or anything. It was just quite a difference of opinion, and well, how do you please everybody? Back to you. How do we handle a difficult parent? Yes.
I think if a parent calls a board member with some sort of issue that they have, I think the board has to be very careful how much promises and statements that they share. I'll do this, I'll do that. Be careful what you say.
Be careful as a board member in promising or suggesting that you're going to go do something. Why is that a wise move? Yeah, you can't make the decision for the board. That's one thing. What else? You don't know the whole story yet, do you? What you ought to do first, what should you do first? I mean, he's right on track on what he said. What do we do in that situation? Yeah, we get the other side of the story, and depending a little on the situation, say, you know what, that goes back to the teacher involved or to the principal, depending on how far it's advanced, but redirect the parent to hopefully not to keep this thing from going top level right away. But excellent point to be very careful what you commit to. Remember, it can be persuasive. We want to please. Oh, it's so tempting. But let's not try to speak for the board. Wow. So, those are all good ideas. Thank you very much. I could add this, that I went to our school board chairman last week and asked him this question, and he said, well, he would, if he was responsible to go talk to this parent, he would intentionally create dialogue without immediately plunging into the subject of difficulty. And then he said that our principal does so well, and it sometimes wears him a lot because he thinks that there are things that are wrong about the attitudes involved and so on. But he's so very careful and kind to be hearing and learning and leading into this and yet leading into the subject though head on and explore commonality and showing genuine love and care. He just gives him a high mark for his role. So there are some of the thoughts that he had. Maybe we'll move on unless someone is just feeling excluded here. So the committee said, let's think about the rebellious student. How should a board handle a rebellious student? Well, I don't know for sure how much the board will need to, right? Because a lot of times this is going to come to the teacher, lie with the teacher and the principal. And hopefully not very many issues are going to come to the board, but they do sometimes, don't they? Sometimes there's some ethical problem, moral problem, and so on, that can come to the board level. Remember the story I told you yesterday about Mark Nisley, of that profound happening in his life when he was in the 10th grade and he was being inattentive in the morning devotions, and then his teacher, Vernon Mullet, said, called him out and said, please go to the office and I will come to attend to you soon. And when Mark arrived, when Mark went, he expected some harsh rebuke and waited. And when the teacher arrived, he began, Mark, I expect the best from you. And what I'm trying to do is to develop you as a student. And that kind of statement got Mark's attention, and he listened to what he said next. Vernon said, I'm concerned about your spiritual journey, and I want you to know that I love you. And then he put his arms around Mark and gave him a huge hug. Mark said that experience made him want to listen to his teacher and to value his words. So that was a story that ties into a difficult student, but you know, it's not always an immediate, and we can't always just know that this is going to be received in the same way that Mark received it. And there are many ideas that we could share. So I'll pause again if you would like to suggest or recall something that's happened under your watch. I'm not really aware of the time. They put the clock in front of you instead of in front of me. How are we doing? Ha 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 ha. Good. Saved by the bell. I hope that these concepts can be put to work in more effective ways, and that God will attend you in learning how to apply these kinds of things. Thank you very much for your presence and attention. I will dismiss you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.